if ammonia gets released and it hits the product, that's all waste. So you want, it's going to be a very, you know, the system is designed to be as safe as you possibly can. It's going to be fully designed to meet all the requirements and guidelines of the IIAR, which is the International Institute of Ammonia Refrigeration. They set a lot of the standards for this and what we design around. Stralis is going to be, there'll be a third-party contractor that we're going to service and maintain the system, in addition to their on-site people that will be running that system. That will also allow them to be able to monitor that thing continuously. For additional safety, the refrigeration system is going to be designed with a dilution tank. And basically what that does, in case of a overpressurization of the system, the relief valve will open and it will release all the ammonia in the system into the water tank and essentially make it inert. Basically what it does is it takes all the liquid ammonia and it dumps all the liquid ammonia that's in the system, and it'll push that through the tank and basically diffuse that ammonia.
Yeah, now, that was what I was trying to get at. I hope I don't get muted again, because I just wanted to make one point.
Alderwoman Wilhelm, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you.
It's always good that...
I know that we're pretty much just here to hear the good stuff, but my job isn't just here to hear the good stuff. And I think it's important that we get, even pull back the curtain and talk about the things that could happen. Now, we know that they could be slight, but if we don't address what could happen, we can't put a plan that safely protects our community. And I get a little upset when I keep getting cut off, because I have questions that I've gotten from people. So, as I was saying, it is a moisture scavenger, and it does go directly to your eyes and your nose and your membranes, and it can be quite dangerous.
Yes, there's no lie about that at all.
Okay, and what my concern is not that it happens a lot. My concern is that it happens even once, and we have a police department that says they don't feel like the area is being served that well. That is concerning to me. The other thing that I didn't hear anyone discuss was, when the fire department arrives, they need to know an evacuation area if it's a gas. Can we just at least put a windsock on top of the building? So
that's actually a requirement.
Thank you.
So that as part of the PSM program, that's required. You need to have a windsock on there, and part of the plan is exactly will determine. You know,
I just didn't see that the Plan Commission even really knew enough to ask the question, so I needed to just ask the question.
No, and that's fine. And again, we're not trying to hide that ammonia is perfect. There's no hazard here. You have to kind of look at it the same way you'd look at natural gas. We pipe natural gas to our house, to our furnaces, to our water heaters. It's piped all the way over in buildings, and that has a huge potential for explosion. And fire on that side of it. So we deal with different hazards all the time in buildings. We just have to take it into account what exactly the system is, design it properly, design it to the appropriate guidelines and regulations, and meet those requirements. And overall, taking a look at it from that standpoint, I guess my statement is the only question, is ammonia refrigeration safe? And my answer is yes, but there's a caveat to it. The system has to be properly maintained, and it has to be properly designed.
So what do you feel about the need for the police and
let's
fire?
Let's hear from the fire chief, Chief Remington.
We identified the ammonia on site early on as a concern, just for this reason, to make sure that all these items are properly considered and addressed as the project moves forward. Not because in and of itself, ammonia within the building is automatically a huge danger to public health and safety. We just want to make sure this right process is followed and all of this is considered in the design as the project moves forward. it's something we certainly need to know about from the firefighting perspective. When we're going to show up at a building like this and there's potentially ammonia inside, we have to know which operating engineer to grab to tell us how to properly shut this down in what order, if that's what we need to do. Initially, it's not going to look like any different than any other response, like for a gas leak, for a major fire. We're going to show up. We're going to assess the situation. We're going to talk to the people on scene. We're going to make sure we have appropriate resources there, and we're going to handle the problem. We're going to keep the people away from the problem. In searching throughout the state, ammonia incidents that's happened within the state in the, over the last 5 years, and there's only a handful, they've been quickly and effectively handled, for the most part, by rural volunteer departments. So I'm confident we have the capacity. I just wanted to make sure we are following the right process and doing things right.
As I am. We're on the same page with that.
The staffing issue on the southern part of our city, that's another issue. That dates back 20 years. We've never staffed Station 2 properly. We as a city need to find a way to do this. We can discuss that at a later date. That's not about Strauss. That's not about one project or another. That's about us now having development occurring in areas that are served by a two-person fire station, the only two-person fire station in Milwaukee County, and now we have significant development coming in that we need to address.
That's why you hire professional staff and you let them do their jobs. Okay. Randy? Alderwoman Hanneman, you did some research. Your microphone, please.
So I've prepared some comments. Some of the issues that I may have been answered here, so thank you. So first off, I am the alder person for the 4th District where Strauss currently resides. I do live just over a mile as the crow flies from the current facility, and they've been here longer than I have in this community. So first off, I do want to acknowledge and thank every one of the residents, especially my constituents in 4th District, who have taken time to email and call and have had some meaningful conversations with me about this over the past couple of weeks. Some of us haven't agreed on every point, but I appreciate the engagement and the communications. One point most of us do agree on is that Franklin is a growing community and we have growing industries. While that is generally regarded as a good problem to have, especially during a time of great economic uncertainty, it does not come without the inherent growing pains that accompany that sort of change. Change is very hard in any area of life, especially when there is a set of perceived unknowns and complexities. Could we, as a government, and Strauss as well, done a better job of outreach and sharing information at the front end of this process? You bet we could. It's called change management, and I'll throw myself under the bus with all the rest of us. I think we could have done a lot more to, say, bring on Economic Development Commission on board or assist with presenting the community what the plans were for this portion of the city, what the cost and benefits would have been. Maybe we could have put together an online FAQ page where we could address concerns, meet people where they are, and not rely on rumor and conjecture to fuel the frenzy. We could have been much more transparent and forthcoming on a lot of the information, and I'll hold myself to that standard going forward as long as I still hold this position. While it's not our job up here to sell this development on behalf of Strauss, our residents do look to us for answers. A communication and change management plan might have presented some of the anxiety that many of our residents have had, especially over the past couple of weeks. So to that end, I've spent a good portion of time over the past couple of weeks deeply immersed in teasing out some of these complexities in an effort to inform my position and my vote based on fact rather than on emotion, fear, and hearsay. Admittedly, my perspective is also informed by my upbringing, experiences, and education. For those who don't know me very well, I hold a master's degree in applied economics from Marquette University School of Business, and I am certified in economic measurement by the National Association of Business Economics. So I took it upon myself to conduct a professional economic impact study so we can have a more clear picture of what this project can mean in economic terms to the city of Franklin. What I've discerned is that currently, just by being located and doing business in the city of Franklin, our local economy benefits by an additional $1.3 million a year. This accounts for purchases that Strauss makes from local businesses, such as fuel at local gas stations, office supply products they might use, you know, any of those sundry items. It also accounts for money that their employees spend in the city in places such as the grocery stores and restaurants. My analysis estimates that with the proposed expansion, this would increase to $2.4 million worth of indirect and induced money in our local economy. That is money that goes to our restaurants, to our bars, to our grocery stores, our haircutting places, many businesses. So Strauss projects that their investment in $60 million of construction would allow them to produce an annual revenue of about $275 million by 2024. This stimulus would increase the total economic impact to $337 million just within the 53132 zip code. And it would directly support over 700 jobs through their expanded output and construction jobs on this project. The impact to Milwaukee County is even greater. So to be clear, if Strauss is ultimately denied this expansion, that's our trade-off. In addition to over $4 million in impact fees that would be paid to the city of Franklin if they take out a construction permit, and guaranteed taxes of over $300,000, which is significantly higher than what they paid in 2019. So that's an overview. I have my report here somewhere down here, but you know, I'll share that afterwards with anyone who might want to see it. But I thought we might want to know what some of those numbers are. Thank you.
I as well did a quick report for a constituent who said, why not put some houses there instead? Which was an interesting thought, because they just made a comment to me on the phone call of, who'd want to build a house there? It's near the dump. Well, I said, okay, so you want to put some houses there? I can run those numbers for you. So I did a quick calculation of 22 houses, and based on what Mr. Mills was talking about, at $500,000 each, of course you got to delay some things because you got to go through rezoning and the rest of that. With Strauss, with the guaranteed value, with the assessment guarantee for the first 2 years, $15 million for 21 and 22, jumps to $60 million in 23. That's an assumed assessed value attached by state of Wisconsin. The first 2 years, their taxes would be $333,300. Based on a tax rate of $22.22, you probably wouldn't get a home built. This does not count for probably $9 million in roads, sewer, gutter, water, etc., that need to be put in. But you build two homes, probably get two homes up in 22, six in 23, absorption in 12 and 24, etc., etc. Then that is, once you're fully built out, I estimated in 26, you'd have $11 million worth of homes and $60 million worth of Strauss. So there's, what is that math? $49 million difference in assessed value, but the taxes are $1,333,200 for Strauss. And Jerry's about ready to walk out. Versus $200,000 for homes. So that's a big tax difference. So people make this mistake of thinking there's a lot of money in taxes and houses. There's not. Alderman Dandrea.
I think along that same line, Mr. Mayor, is the significant impact that would occur on our infrastructure in the city, meaning the school system. Also, the impact on our library, on our police department, and our fire department. Those are going to have more significant impact than an industrial business business park in general. So I think we've beat this long enough. I think we need to move forward, and I'd like to make that motion to adopt the resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval. Let's get the motion on the table.
Wow.
There's going to be a point for discussion afterwards.
Should we have the district make a motion? It's his district.
I've got the floor. Approval of a special use for the meat processing facility. Use upon property located at the southwest corner of the intersection of West Loomis Road and the new Monarch Drive, Lot 83 of Ryan Meadows Subdivision, Strauss Brands LLC applicant.
Is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Okay. Alderman Nelson.
No.
It's time for discussion first.
Yeah.
But thank you for letting us know what your vote is.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
That was a complete setup. So I have some information that I think the resident should hear. So the mayor gave us earlier, he said 20 EMS calls, 14 EMS and 20 fire calls over 10 years. So I asked him for this document because this is the police and fire calls, regardless of alarm or what it is, this takes staff time. So what I came up with was in 2 years, there were 45 calls. He says in 10 years, there's only 34 calls. So there's a pretty big difference there in what you were told, and I think that this should be a public document. And that's what I'm having with a lot of this. We are not here to sell this project for them. They are supposed to sell it to you. They're supposed to sell it to us. There's been a lot of information that was given here tonight that you as the public didn't get to vet. I didn't get to vet it. I appreciate Sherry Hanneman, Alderman Hanneman's comments. I appreciate what the mayor says. I appreciate. But I'm a person who likes to read and analyze it and vet it. I can't vet verbal comments. I have no documents in front of me. And this should have been made available to the Plan Commission members when they were looking at it. So since Sherry got to give a presentation, I'm going to give a little one of my own. I would like all the calculations to be vetted by our expert financials, Ellers. Between the public comments and the massive number of emails, our work should be actually somewhat simplified. So I went through and I crossed off some of the things were addressed, so hopefully that will shorten this up a little bit. The claimed positive tonight's are jobs and tax base. The available public information contains confusion on the number of jobs either going to be created or present. The information we were given tonight does not match the information given to the public. That needs to be more thoroughly looked at because I can't sit here and say we're going to vote on jobs. When I counted up 12 people who spoke against the idea of jobs and 3 people that had favorable job comments. And when we have figures that don't match, that doesn't work very well. So the current presentation should have been public and should have been able to vetted. You said you've been working on this since, I don't know, 2016, and we're just getting this presentation tonight. There should have been public meetings. Yes, we should have done a better job. Yes, there should have been plans out in the hallways, at the library, everywhere for this. Mr. O'Malley had to come in for a concept review for tennis courts and a swimming pool. And you come in with a massive 4-acre building for phase one, and they vote on it in the Plan Commission on the same night, and now we're supposed to vote on it without the district alderperson even having a say. Will there be a need for Loomis Road shuttle between Milwaukee since only three of your employees are working in Franklin? And based the taxes are based on the value in is the difference in zoning. The assessed value will be set by the state, and that will be somewhere around 60%. That's much less than if we would have left this zone business. There is also no personal property taxes collected on industrial users like there are in businesses. We need to take that into consideration. So, but what is really before us? Is it jobs? Is it taxes? They had one woman told me, I don't care, raise my taxes. I don't want to live in a community with a slaughterhouse. That kind of said a lot to me. So what is before us is a special use. A special use is 15-3 as, I couldn't believe how many people knew the ordinance in this audience and studied it. So I give them a lot of credit. Our job is to approve or deny a special use permit. And a special use permit shall not be granted unless, and some of the residents said that, it's consistent and in harmony with the city's master plan. I saw people holding up the color versions. The use and activity conflicts with the master plan and the zoning. So guess what? We rezoned it because it conflicted. So it's not consistent with the master plan. It seems the user creates a cascade of rezoning to accommodate its use. I don't know how many people know about the rezoning to put the junkyard to the south so they wouldn't have a use that would be in conflict with the slaughter yard, but that set up another rezone. That was the controversial split vote, and it was also not consistent with the master plan. This is the future of our city. We put that 42-inch pipe in the ground for the Ryan Creek Interceptor for the future growth of our city. And this is the center wagon wheel of that area. We're also to consider the coordination cooperation of nearby units of government. We were pretty much told Muskego doesn't count. That's not what the land use documents in the Wisconsin statutes documents for smart growth and comprehensive master plans tell us we're supposed to do. It also includes consideration for farmland preservation. We have not taken any of that in consideration in our entire planning process with this. We're not our own island. What we approve can impact others. So I was kind of surprised when no one responded that their current permit compliance, which I have from the DNR, and that they're considered a significant user, and that they don't have a permit from MSD right now for their current use. I have it in writing right here. I've had it verified. I didn't want to bring it up until I had it verified, but they do not have their permit. They contacted the district yesterday regarding the need to permit this source, even in its existing operations. MMSD was involved in the discussions with the facility when the site was proposed at Century City in the city of Milwaukee. It is my understanding they have not yet been involved since that time. Now, they're saying they have, so I can't dispute that, but this came to me today. So they're only supposed to have the holding capacity for 300. They said they were, right on the record, they're at 500 calves a day. And that's the current special use. We're about to give them a similar special use. So if we can't hold them to the special use they have now, I think we should be concerned about putting in some conditions for the special use in the future if those that are going to vote on this do that. And I have a list of things that if I were voting in favor of this, what right now I'm not compelled to do that, unless some of those conditions could get put in at all, and then I'm not so sure. Slaughtering in general places them in the significant user category, and they fail to require their permits. There's no rush. The applicant has not obtained all the approvals, and there's no proof that the applicant will, but they probably will, or will not be able to comply at the same rate of speed that we're moving this along. Those permits from the MMCs, this is going to take some vetting. We don't really have to move at the speed we're doing because they're not going to get those in a day or two. Adequate public facilities. Our vote depends on proof the development is adequately served by essential public services, including public water supply, police, and fire, or the applicant will provide for such facilities. Water usage. The current water usage, according to my nearly phone call with Jerry here, he said they're paying $25,000 a month in water at a quarter of the size. I don't know what that means for our draw of our water, but that's the current special exception has some really great wording in for water conditions. And I think that old wording about if they use so much gallons and the whole wording, and the staff can look that up, should be another one of those conditions in the special use. The 1999 legislation requires water supply plan approved by the DNR and showing it is consistent with the comprehensive master plan. Well, we recently rezoned the master plan. Here's the water plan right here. Spent the time reading it. It says in here that industrial users or users out in here would require this. So this is needed for Strauss. Otherwise, we probably won't have the water pressure capacity for the fire department. Okay. So please don't just tell the residents we can meet the water pressure requirements for fire service and the unknown gallons that you will need. At the same time, while we're buying land for a new water tower, proof is upon the applicant. There are many emails as late as today where others continue to make their case for them, which also weren't part of the public for you to view, all the emails that we got. The applicant has not met the requirement related to the safety services. The fire chief sent an email yesterday stating they are not able to safely serve the additional development. This would present an unreasonable danger to the health or safety of the applicant's workforce, other site users, and the public. That recent letter needs to be made publicly available to all of you. We covered the anhydrous ammonia issue. I realize it's a great product. I feel like we should have some type of independent review on that, just like we sort of have on the quarry. We have some independent reviews just to make sure that they're complying, especially when we have a couple non-compliant things now. We want to have some oversight, right? It makes sense. Sanitation and odors. There are no guarantees there will be no odors. They've done a lot of methods to help with that, but there's not going to be a guarantee. The applicant has not provided adequate sanitation related to the truck entering and leaving or during the unloading. There's a use of a PVC piping from the loading drain areas into the stormwater basin. The gentleman here from ESI says he would check on that. I believe that to be correct, but I would appreciate you checking that out. Traffic hours of operation from 1 a.m. to 1 p.m. are not consistent with the future residential area and will be a continuous noise complaint, as well as concern for diesel idling, more odors from exhaust fumes. And as I said, I get that from the Sam's Club, so I'm really aware of what that's all about. A truck every 45 minutes is what Jerry told me on the phone. There was a little bit different figure. I think it was a truck every hour to bring in the 500 head. Then that does not include the other service trucks. So those truck numbers are not exactly the same as what was in the documents. adequate measure will be taken to provide ingress and egress. We have a one-way, I wish the map was still up there, we have a one-way in and out cul-de-sac that is built beyond the allowable UDO ordinance of the city's length. The cul-de-sac length in the city of Franklin's maximum for safety is 800. I don't know what it is, but I know it's far beyond 800 feet with no other way in and out. So if there's an emergency, there's not another way in if that road gets blocked off for some reason. Let's say the ammonia does leak and it goes that direction. Well, you're going to drive through the plume? You know, it. Can it meet the safety standards during the wind direction evacuation? I don't know that.